irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Wow.
Here we go.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Here it is now, Thursday evening. You're listening to LA Talk Radio, The Writer's Block. I am your host, back from the dead, Jim Christina, hiding out my little secret studio in Sawtooth and Rocky Mountain Ranges, somewhere in Idaho. And I'm on the phone right now with my co-host, my wonderful friend and good companion, Bobby Jean Bell.
We're so glad to have you back in the saddle, Mr. Christina. Welcome back.
Oh my God! I swear, it's been a month. It has been a month of hell.
Were missed.
Oh my gosh! Well, thank you so much, and I miss being on the air, but I am back. I'm sitting in my studio, and we are ready to get rolling and rocking. And you today, for those of you who don't know Bobby and I, we talk a lot during the week, usually two or three times. And she reminded me today. It was an important anniversary today. And Bobby, would you like to remind everyone what that is?
Well, there's so many ways to think about it, but June 25th, 1876, is an important day in the history of so many things. I think of it as a day that a lot of widows were made. This is a day of course, the Battle of the Little Bighorn,
right?
Which, has gone down in history and continues to be written about, continues to inspire books and movies and poems and art. And it continues to capture our imaginations. And so I always think about their Last Supper last night and then kind of what went on today and how the news began to go from this spot,
right.
You know, and over the next few days. So, right. Yeah, and you wrote a book about it.
I did. Most people think that the battle took place only in about 90-minute increments, and which is not true. The battle actually took place over the course of a day and a half. Mm-hmm. Once Custer was defeated, the Sioux and the Cheyenne and the Arapaho turned their arrows and their rifles up to Reno's Bluff and continued to attack them for another day. And there was more heroism and more medals of honor given on Reno Hill than any other battle, I think, in the Indian Wars.
Yeah, that makes sense. It captures my imagination every year.
Mine too. And I write a book about it. It's called Bugles in the Sun. It chronicles the last 20 full days of the march from the 7th from I think Yellowstone Creek or somewhere down in there up to the Little Bighorn, but not into the battle because everybody knows what happened there. So,
yeah.
But it's taken from the troopers' side. So if you get a chance, pick it up. It's a pretty good read. It's told each chapter starts with a journal entry, so it's an interesting read, and I enjoyed writing it, and I did a hell of a lot of research on this one.
Oh yeah, you did because. We don't want to do any spoiler alerts. Get the book and read it.
There you go. No spoiler alerts. Okay. We have a really special guest on with us tonight. We've read you and I, Bobby, probably, I'm going to say in the, how many books you think we've read? 200 and some odd?
263.
Yeah, I'm going to say a third of those are romance novels.
Yes.
This was a different take on romance novels, and as a matter of fact, it kind of just grabs your imagination. The name of our author tonight is Linda, and her actual full name is Linda Nightingale. She's with us on the phone now. Linda is a enjoyed entertaining life from breeding and showing Andalusian horses to living in England as well as Canada. She has two wonderful sons, one in England, one in Houston. She loves piano, horses, sports cars. Oh, I love sports cars too. Reading, writing, and handsome men. Well, I don't blame you there. I don't necessarily like handsome men, but I do like beautiful women. All right. She won some notable awards for her writing, including the GRW Magnolia Award for Excellence, the Maggie, and the San Antonio Romance Authors Sarah Merritt Award. She particularly likes formal dresses and formal affairs, hosting formal dinner parties. She also enjoys getting grubby with anything to do with horses. Me too. At present, she has 6 published novels, 4 in audio, 6 with the Wild Rose Press, and 1 self-published. Find out more about her on her website and various social media. She would love to hear from you via email at nighttime, THYME2003@yahoo.com. Please welcome to the Writer's Block with Linda Nightingale.
Top of the morning to you.
Welcome, Linda. Welcome, welcome.
Top of the evening.
Well, you know, I'm personally, and Bob, I think Bobby is too. We love vampires. We've had a couple of vampire books come through our midst in times go by. And I have to say that this was an intriguing take on the vampire genre, not only because of your spelling of the word, which would be more English than European, the V-A-M-P-Y-R-E, but the way that they behave as compared to, say, the vampires of Romania or France or Germany or Nosferatu or those little critters there. I have to say, and Linda, you and I talked about this the other night, and I will bring this up because our audience likes to hear little bits like this. There is something of another vampire in this book, and although they are not the same, they were made about the same time, and that would be Lestat de Liancourt from the Vampire Chronicles, of course, of Anne Rice. And the similarities are small, but they are there. They're not nagging, but you can tell. But I love your character. Your Morgan is just like a guy that just, he's after my own heart.
Really, Jim?
Morgan Darcy, what a name. I mean, first of all, what a great name. And I've been known to come up with pretty good names, but Morgan Darcy, the Earl of St. Averill. Holy crap. I mean, that's like really says a lot. And where exactly did Morgan come from? In your psyche or wherever he did spring from, maybe out of your eternal youth, who knows?
Yes, out of my eternal youth. Morgan, the name Morgan, I've always loved the name Morgan. And Darcy was an English version of an earlier French name.
Okay.
And I won't murder it by trying to tell you what it is. he came, it sounds like a visitation, but he came sort of as a full-blown character. He walked on stage and started telling me his story, and he wouldn't let me rest until I sat down and wrote it. And he was my first effort. It was my first book.
That's what you were saying, but it took a long time to get it published.
It did. It took a really long time.
And you, of course, written about Morgan afterwards, because you've got other titles that include him. Yes, yes. He is a he does not consider himself a vampire. He considers himself a genetic freak of nature, I believe is the way you put it.
He is a viral mutation.
A viral mutation, right.
He's there's a fragile virus that they carry in their blood, and when they bite somebody and drain them nearly to death and then feed them their vampire blood, that makes a vampire.
Right.
Because the virus is introduced into their body and it mutates their DNA.
Mm-hmm.
So he becomes a bloodsucker.
But there's a couple of characters. He has a manservant that's been with him a long time.
Yes.
20 years or so. He's a really neat guy. He'd be fun for an actor to play Avery. And Avery is still mortal, is he not? Even though he relies.
He is.
So they, you know, I guess what I felt was I haven't read a lot of, I did read The Vampire Diaries, but it's been a long time. And I felt like you kind of blew away out of my mind. You sort of inrushed all kinds of new things about vampires. I don't think garlic is ever mentioned, for instance, in this book. And he could look in a mirror, you know, and see himself. And mostly in my mind is like, okay, you know, vampire, one way you become a vampire is because, of course, you're bitten. And then if you're still alive, now you become a vampire. But this, there was a whole lot of sophistication I found with these, the few vampires. It's a small cast of characters. It's a big book, but it's a small cast of characters.
Right.
And we get to know them all pretty intimately, don't we?
Yes, we do.
And I wondered if you might like to share a little bit more about sort of what these vampires can do that's otherworldly, because you've allowed them to do some things that we maybe don't think of vampires being able to do.
Right. Right. Well, intimacy, of course, is one thing that we do get to meet with them.
Oh, yes.
And there is this book has its share.
Yeah,
hot.
I'm living vicariously.
Okay.
another week of hot sex, folks.
There you go. I mean, let's start on page two.
Start on page two. I think I waited till page five.
I don't remember what page, but it was pretty, pretty quick.
I think Morgan is a little bit like the guy that everybody would like to be, and the guy that every woman would like to have in her corner. You know, he's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would definitely...
kind of like the Energizer Bunny.
Exactly. He just keeps on going.
He does. Keeps on. Yeah. But his love interest in this book is he wants her badly, but for some reason they just don't seem to be able to hook up that often. That's Isabel. And Isabel is kind of a weird character, not weird, but a very intriguing character, because without giving too much of the book away, she was visited by what was it? St. Michael, I guess it was, when she was a baby.
Gabriel.
Gabriel.
Oh, Gabriel, right. And she was visited, and she kind of hooked up to that kind of life. And so, I mean, this whole thing is kind of like back and forth with Isabeau and Morgan. And then, you know, then you have Azazel, who we're not really sure what he is or who he is. Or, you know, he says he's not evil, but I don't know.
Lucian
St. Albans. Lucian. Yeah.
Yes, Lucian is the head vampire. He's
right.
The chief counselor of the vampire council that rules the vampire, and they do have laws. And Morgan's sort of taken a jackhammer to those stone tablets.
Right.
But Lucian... I hope he's not listening. It's patterned after my ex-husband.
Oh,
wow. Really?
Yeah, I hope he's not listening.
Surprise, Bernie.
Yeah, really. Oh, but he's Lucian. I found him a likable anti-hero, you know. I like to use him because he's so fascinated with Morgan that he'll do almost anything that Morgan tells him or asks him to do. And yet, he's the more powerful of the two. But Morgan isn't interested in Lucian in the way Lucian wants him to be interested in him. So, never the twain shall meet there.
Yeah.
But Lucian has his weak spot, and that occurs in the next book, Sinner's Obsession, which is the sequel. It's not out yet.
Well, going to the vampire genre itself, I noticed that not only yourself, but pretty much everyone that writes about vampires has an underlying theme in that, don't they all have weak spots someplace?
I think when you're writing a book, you can't make your hero untouchable. He can't be.
I think you're right.
He has to be human. He has to have faults. And Morgan's got his share.
He does.
Well, yes.
But yeah, I think they have to be approachable. They have to. You have to be able to identify with them.
Right. Right. It's and like they say, you know, you can sit next to me at a bar and you never know who I was. So, okay. I've probably done that. Who knows? I mean, you know. the vampire genre has always been, I just have to ask this question. It's just burning in my soul. How's that, Bobby G? Pretty good, huh?
Pretty good.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
Okay. What brought in the vampire genre to your writing? What brought them into your psyche and to your writing? Because it's an odd character to have in a romance slash novel type thing. It seemed funny at first, but then you get used to it, so it's pretty good.
Go ahead, Jim.
Go ahead. No, I just asked you, what brought the vampire into your writing?
When I started writing back in the Dark Ages, vampires were they weren't really well known in romance like they are today.
Right.
And in fact, when I won the Maggie, it was with another Morgan book, but when I won the Maggie, Berkeley called me and said, do you have anything besides vampires? That's all I had. The vampires, I think, came, believe it or not, I'm terrified of blood. I pass out. So maybe it was my way of getting past that.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Much good way, I suppose.
I had read, and I had always been a vampire fan. I think I saw every vampire movie when I was young.
Oh my God, me too.
Well, I would look forward to a Barnaby Collins and Dark Shadows every afternoon when I got home from school. Everybody else was watching, you know, whatever the other soap operas were on, but it was Dark Shadows for me.
Well, see, for me, it was Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
Oh my God, best vampire ever. Yeah. Hey, look, we're going to take a break. We'll be back to you in a few minutes. Don't go away. Have another sip of that wine, Linda, and we'll be back to you in just a few minutes, right after this word from LA Talk Radio. Hi, Jim Christina, your host for The Writer's Block, right here on LA Talk Radio. And this is just a reminder that while everybody's locked down with this COVID-19, working from home, getting bored, you do have an option, and that option is to go to www.latalkradio.com. See, as a .com, we've got it all from music, sports, self-help, Hell, we even have talk. So why don't you tune in during the day while you're working and listen to what our great hosts and great shows have to say. And just a reminder, Thursday night, 7 p.m. Pacific, is the Writer's Block, brought to you by LA Talk Radio. So have yourselves a great time, stay safe out there, and remember, latalkradio.com. And we are back. It is now, so let's see, 7:19. We are on the phone with Linda. And she is, she is talking to us about vampires. That'd be Linda Nightingale, and about vampires and putting vampires in her stories. I find it amazing, and I know Bobby Jean, you and I talked about this, is that the familiarity we have with the genre and the vampire itself, I think it's only been in maybe four or five books, but this one kind of like. Didn't bring it home, but it sure opened your eyes to a different way of looking at a vampire. That's for sure. So, was that your intent, Linda, or did it just come out that way?
No, I really did intend to make them different because I mean I loved the old vampires, but I didn't want mine to be at all like the old ones. Mm-hmm. I didn't want them to be like. Nosferatu particularly, but I thought there's got to be something else that could cause vampirism. And I thought about it and thought about it. And I think one day it just sort of a light went off and I thought, what if they were mutated some way? Mm-hmm. And I did some research online about mutated DNA, and just an aside, we all are viral mutants. All different kinds of little diseases that we've had have mutated our DNA. But I found some really interesting stuff that I could use for Isabeau in her studies of Morgan's DNA.
Okay.
Because she gets Morgan's DNA when he's appearing to her as the angel Gabriel. And that's part of the story. That's about as far as I think I should go with that.
Well, if you don't want to give away spoiler alerts, I think that's probably where you need to stop.
I thought you had some really inventive, and I don't think these would give things away, but they often will partake in Black Swan. Which is a beverage. You want to just touch on Black Swan for a moment?
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand, Bobby.
Well, some of what I found was so intriguing was as you describe the world that these vampires kind of move and work, you know, live in. And Black Swan is an important beverage. I don't think there's any spoiler alert there. Do you want to just maybe tell us the power of Black Swan?
Sure. Black Swan is both a beverage, which is blood willingly donated by vampire groupies, for lack of a better word. And they trade their blood for a taste of the vampire's blood, which if it's not introduced in a sufficient amount to change somebody, that it gives them sort of a glimpse of the things that a vampire can do. Uh-huh. Heightened senses, being able to move faster, but they can't do the speed of movement that appears that they teleport.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But the Black Swan is also the person, and they have elaborate parties for these Black Swans so that they will willingly donate their own blood. And the gold label is when the person has been drinking, if they're intoxicated. Mm-hmm. And that intoxicant does transfer to the vampire. So he gets happy as well.
Yeah, there are some fun formal affairs, and now that we know that you love formal affairs and you love music, I was wondering where the title Sinner's Opera, how that title came into play, because he's a concert pianist, but it's I was curious about your choice of that title.
It's really, I wish it was mysterious, Bobby. But I was driving down the road one day in my truck, because I still had my horses. And I looked to the side, and there was a marquee that said, Sinner's Opera performing tonight.
Oh, that's awesome. See,
oh,
but
wow,
we love, but what a wonderful inspiration. We love to see, hear how these things come about.
So I lifted the name from a band.
Oh, that's great.
I love it. Why not?
And of course, you know, Jim chose the opening music, Moonlight Sonata, and we did that on purpose. You want to tell us a little bit about Moonlight Sonata and how it plays into the book?
And, well, he plays the Moonlight Sonata for his beloved,
right,
Isabeau. And all of this romance where he brings her into his piano, into his piano room with his grand piano, and plays the Moonlight Sonata and opens up the double doors onto the balcony to overlook the Atlantic Ocean. All of this is just romance, mm-hmm, to get her to come to him and to be his, mm-hmm, because he has wanted her more than anybody else all along in his whole 350 years.
And I will never hear that music without thinking of that scene now.
Not anymore.
I love the Moonlight Sonata.
Yeah.
I hope I haven't ruined it for you, Bobby.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Moonlight Sonata. I mean, that's such, but it's such a haunting melody, mm-hmm, which, I mean, makes it totally appropriate for a theme for this particular book, because the book itself is haunting. Mm-hmm. And I caught something in there that I Bobby said she didn't really get, or maybe she did, but not the way I did. I caught a lot of Morgan kind of not pining away, but remembering bits and pieces of his prior life before he was made a vampire, and it kind of like makes him a little sad from time to time. Did you mean to put that in there?
I did. Okay. I wanted Morgan to be as round and as much of a character. I wanted him to come alive, mm-hmm, and step off the page for the reader. And mm-hmm, I thought that if I added little things about him from his past, mm-hmm, it made him a fuller, more complete person.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm, I have written the prequel to that, which is called Sinner's Walls.
Okay.
That's his story as a mortal man, mm-hmm, during the reign of Charles II.
Well, it would be like like Bobby or you and I are, or even you, Linda, getting immortality, and we're now 350, almost 400 years old. And what do you do when you wake up in the middle of the night? You go, oh, another day.
Mm-hmm. The boredom. You know?
The boredom has got to get to them.
Oh, I would think so.
Which I think Morgan clearly showed, just not blatantly.
Yeah, Isabeau is his salvation. She
right.
is rescued from that boredom. And he's let himself depend on her more than he's ever let himself depend on anybody.
Sure. Because he's in love.
Yeah, but at the end, you know, of the day, he is the kind of person who doesn't want to give himself completely.
Well, yeah. I think, but that's inherently true with all most vampires. They can't give themselves completely. There's something holds them back.
Well, it's one of the things that makes him, again, human. It's one of the things I think you've written into him that makes him, again, more human-like, where he's afraid she'll leave him. He doesn't want to be alone. It's sort of easier to build a fortress around yourself than open yourself up and then be alone again. And I liked those times when we got to see his humanity, his caring way with Avery. And of course, he does not like Isabeau's fiance at all. Payne is kind of a little bit humorous. I mean, I think that it's not a lot of cast characters, but the ones that you give us, her friend Kirsty and then John, they kind of bring in every now and again. It's like we have to have a little break from the tenseness of the relationship between our two main characters, and they provide some relief as well as plot forwarding.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. We're going to take another quick break. Bobby, are you ready to do a live reading of your Out West ad?
I am.
Okay, then. We're going to take a little quick break here, and we're going to hear from Out West, and what a great store they are. And take it away, Bobby G.
Readers wanted. Do you want the book we're talking about tonight, Linda Nightingale's Sinner's Opera, or any of the Writer's Block featured authors? Well, it's easy. One-stop shopping, and you support independent booksellers when you purchase books at, and you got to write this down, www.bookshop.org/shop/OutWestShop. Click the Writer's Block book list for recent titles that include the podcast link, and browse our other categories: U.S. history, film, music, cooking, tools for writers, biography, fiction, art, and more, and children's books, too. Visit the Writer's Block radio show or Out West Shop Facebook pages for our Book of the Day selections. It's always a great day out west with these four simple steps to support authors and booksellers. Shop, open the package, read, and repeat.
There you go. And that is from Out West. It is now 7. Oh, look at that. It is 7:30. And we're on the phone with Linda Nightingale. And, of course, my friend, Bobby Jean Bell, and myself, Jim Christina, here at LA Talk Radio, the Writer's Block. We're talking a little bit about vampires. Well, a lot about vampires because it's just a cool subject. But yeah. we also want to get into a little bit more about your writing and your perspective when you are writing, and your process when you were writing. Can you give us a little bit about how it is that you go about writing during your day, if you indeed do write during your day?
I don't write every day. I don't have a schedule. Mm-hmm. I write when the mood strikes me, more or less.
Okay.
But I do like to put as much, when I get what I call the white hot stream of creativity. I mean, I sat at the computer one morning from 6:30 until 10 o'clock that night.
Oh, wow.
And didn't move. I forget how many pages I wrote. I think something like 25 or 30.
Wow.
But then again, the next day I might not write at all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it takes me a long time to write a book because I'm not organized in my my writing efforts. But if I'm not in the mood to write, it just doesn't flow.
Uh huh. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That they tell you that you need to have a writing regime, but a regimen, excuse me, and that it's that you're supposed to like sit down and write like five pages at least in the morning. I can't do that. I have to write when the mood strikes me.
You know, we've had a lot of writers on this show. I couldn't even, Bobby Jean keeps the tally. I have no idea. A lot. 5 years, we've talked to a lot of writers. And one thing that we found out about writers is that everybody does it differently.
Mm-hmm.
There are some writers that believe in regimented writing. They write when they write. There are some writers that, like Ken LaSalle, sits down and writes, what is it, 10,000 words a week?
Oh, yeah. And he's got, you know, like six books are backed up in his brain to be, he's got to get them out and onto, you know.
Exactly.
And I, this is beyond me. I mean, I don't know how a brain works that way.
Beyond me, too.
I mean, we have to throw
a little bit of,
exactly. Well, we do have to throw a little bit of what's called life in there. And, in, you know, and to sit at a desk for 8-10 hours a day and try to pound out 10,000 words a week, holy crap. I couldn't.
I cannot imagine.
It's insane. Well, I mean, to me, but then I'm a pantser, and I'm kind of guess that you are as well.
Oh, I am.
Okay.
Definitely. With a capital P.
With a capital P. Yeah.
I let the characters come along and tell me the story, and if I ended up in a corner, then I write myself out of it. Or if I end up with 100 pages I can't use, then I throw them away.
There you go. I can't tell you how many writers we've talked to that have the same comment that you just made. Their characters dictate their stories.
They do.
They do.
Mine are all character-driven rather than plot-driven, I guess.
Right. But, I mean, I my characters dictate my stories usually because I know them really well. So, I mean, they start going off on a tangent where they don't need to go. They'll tell you, no. Back it up, go this way.
Yeah.
And people think you're crazy. No, that's true. They do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to hear that you're another one, you know? I can't sit with an outline. It would make me nuts because then I felt I would have to stick to the outline. And I'm not that regimented.
That would make it dry.
I think I'm regimented, and I just can't do that. So I try to keep things fresh. So, and you obviously, which also leads me into another question. See, Bobby Jean, you get me going. I'm just, I have been off the air for so long. I'm just going crazy here in my little hidden studio in the Rocky Mountains. Okay, the question also, Linda, is that when it comes time to edit, who does your editing?
I have an editor with my publisher, but I edit my books at least probably twice before I ever send them to her.
Okay.
And I don't have a critique partner at the moment. I've had one that was another author with the Wild Rose Press. But life came along and she's not writing right now, so I'm winging it on my own.
Okay.
That works just as well for me. I guess I'm just not really good at accepting criticism. But I went into a critique group one time and came out bloody and decided, I don't think I want to do that anymore.
Oh, wow. Well, I saw on your blog, your WordPress, you have both your website and then you have WordPress. And you have a lot of really interesting things on both sites. On WordPress, or maybe I saw this even on Facebook, because you have a Facebook page too. But just recently, you participated in a weekend writing warriors. I guess that's a group. And I thought, since so many of our listeners are new writers and all, would you mind taking a moment and just talking about weekend writing warriors?
Yes, please. It's a fascinating subject.
Glad. Yeah, it is a group. They have a Facebook page, and you post on the Facebook page. You post your it's called Weekend Writing Warriors, and you can find them on Twitter, and I think it's Weekend Riding Warriors. I think that's their Twitter name. But there's, you take your WIP, your work in process, our progress, and then you just take a piece of it. Usually people start at the first and go through, and the other authors sort of tell you if you're going the right way. It was really interesting. I only did it one time. Because you'll have like 15 authors and you're sort of expected to go to each one's blog.
Yeah.
And that takes an awful lot of time.
Because I followed the link from the one you participated in. I just clicked on it and I saw it took me to this weekend. So there's one coming up. I guess they do it. They must, is
every
it every, ah, yeah. What a neat tool though.
A wonderful place to learn.
I also noticed something else that you're doing, two other things that you're doing that we really haven't, I think, seen any other authors do very much. One, you're working with a promo video company.
Yes.
Yeah, and you did a really, did you create that at those videos for the writer's blog?
Great video. I did.
Yeah, so would you mind?
I'm so pleased with
them.
Yeah,
they're wonderful. And again, a resource that we really hadn't seen before. Would you mind just talking about that company and what you do with the promo video?
Yes, it's called promo.com.
Okay.
And you can go, you can get a free trial offer so that you can go in and practice. It's not the easiest thing in the world, but after you do it a couple of times, it gets easy. But okay. you can make a video. You go through their database and choose a video that you like. And then you put your text on, whatever you want to say.
Cool.
And then you choose music for it. And they will bring up selections that are the same length as the video.
Oh, wow.
So you choose one of those. Or you can go farther and get farther and farther into it.
But it's
really fun.
It looks fun.
It does. It looks fun. You posted one. Was that just today about Mark Twain? And it's like a glass of champagne with a strawberry in it. Did you do that over the promo video?
I try out all the
stuff. Really fun.
That one at Lumen. L-U-M-I-G-E-N.
Oh, okay.
And okay. That one, again, you can get a free trial.
Yeah.
Love free trials.
One, yeah, I found that one wasn't as easy to use as promo.com. But then another author today posted one on Twitter where she had looped the videos and made something like a book video. And it was quite good.
Wow.
And
yeah.
She did that on the Lumen one. L-U-M-I-N. Yeah,
that's really interesting. Yeah. Really interesting.
But they're really fun to make. They take a while. The first one takes a while.
Yeah.
Bobby Jean.
Yes. It's time for you to ask the question.
Well, actually, okay, I'll ask it because I've been gone.
Yes.
Linda Nightingale. The name of this show is The Writer's Block, and there's a reason we call it The Writer's Block and talk to writers. That is because, have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how did you get out of it? And if you haven't, how did you avoid it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have had writer's block quite frequently lately. Life has been interfering with my writing, so I had gotten a beta reader for this, my work in progress.
Mm-hmm.
And she tore it apart.
Oh, wow. That's sad.
And so I quit. I put it aside. I said, I'll just have to come back to it later.
Uh-huh.
But that gave me writer's block really, really badly. The way I got over it, I moved back to a Morgan story. He will always
Okay. Smart woman. Go back to the fifth year.
If you have a character that you really like and who likes to talk, it's a good way to get over writer's block because you immediately have something to say.
Uh-huh.
The other thing I tried to do, it didn't work as well, is to just start typing. And it might not be something you will use. You probably will trash it. But at least it gets you back into the writing mode.
So, okay. Good answer.
It may
I like
be
it.
Garbage, and
well,
you may have to trash it all.
But you know,
you're at the keyboard and you're inputting your thoughts and maybe creating a character, a new one that you would use.
Well, there's something to go back to the old familiar for sure. You know, well, Linda, we are out of time. It's been so wonderful having you with us, and thank you for staying up and talking with us tonight. It's just like time goes so fast on this show. We get such fascinating people, and consider yourself in that group.
Well, thank you.
You're very welcome.
And thank you for having me.
Oh, you're very welcome. And your website, of course, is Linda Nightingale. That's NIGHTINGALE.com. Or you can go to lindanightingale.wordpress.com. You can email her directly at night, N-I-T-E, time, T-H-Y, ME2003@yahoo.com. And she'd be happy to hear from any of you out there that are interested in finding out more of her genre, which is getting to be fascinating because you've got another vampire book coming up, don't you?
I do. The sequel, The Sinner's Opera.
Okay. Okay. Thank you again. I know it's late back there in South Carolina, and we hesitate to keep you up any later, but thank you again for joining us on the Writer's Block. Have yourself a great evening.
Thank you, and you too.
Thank you.
You're very, very welcome.
Have a sip of wine and a chocolate.
There you go. Have another sip of wine and another box of chocolate.
I hate the chocolate.
7:46, and we're going to be right back after the small, brief word with Creative Edge. You know, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. No, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge, it's your brand and your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, www.creative-edge.services.
Oh, yes. And there were so many things, you know, how they adjust their shields, you know, what they can do to protect themselves and also be able to tune in to listening to conversations and very, very interesting the attributes that she created for these characters. And it just makes that world all the more, you know, interesting. Paranormal romance. You know, it felt a little like fantasy or even almost science fiction, but paranormal. Okay, paranormal romance. I get that.
Me too. And of course, Linda Nightingale is part of the Wild Rose Press.
Mm-hmm.
And the opera's great beginning with the romantic fiction and stuff genres, which is, mm-hmm. I mean, they're everybody's welcome here. So as long as you're writing books and you want to get on the air, well, the bookie's the person you need to talk to. Next week, we also have another Wild Rose Press author. It's Rhonda Gilmore. She writes under the pseudonym of Sadira Stone. She's got, holy crap, she's got a full of books. I mean, she's got like almost a page and a half on Amazon. So
she's wow. Got
a lot of books. And it, of course, is she will also be, I think, our last one in a long line, successive line of romantic novels. But I think this is the last one for a while because we have some wonderful guests coming up in July. And not to mention or not to discount anything that was done before, but July 7th, we have Mr. Craig Johnson back with us on the Writer's Block for his third visit. And Craig is, if you haven't heard a Craig Johnson show, they can get wild and woolly and a lot of fun. And Craig is just a great guy. And we're going to have to make sure that we ask him now that he's out of a job, what is he doing for a living?
Yeah. He's writing.
That is
I know.
True.
And he's with us, I think, on the net. You just said the 7th, but it's the 9th.
The 9th. And, it's the 9th of July, yes.
From our past experiences, the two that we've had with Craig, I would just say have a pen and paper handy.
Oh,
know you're going to hear the podcast over and over so you can stop it and write down what he says. Because everything this gentleman shares, right, Jim? It's like...
Is a nugget.
It's a nugget. It's gold. It's a pearls. It's gems.
It is totally, totally golden. The guy is just like a phenomenal writer. And not because he invented Longmire, but although Longmire is probably one of my very favorite characters, but because he's such a prolific and a good storyteller. So with that being said, of course, we have Craig coming up on the 9th of July. We've got some other people. We have a brand new writer. A high school student will be with us in July.
Yes. Yeah. That's coming up.
Yes.
Oh, that's
coming
awesome.
Up. That's coming up. Yeah. And so we have some really good shows coming up in July. I'm not quite sure what's coming up in August yet, but I'm not going anywhere. Bobby Jean, you're not going anywhere.
I'm not going anywhere.
And so we'll be back next week with Rhonda Gilmore, a.k.a. Sadira Stone. And I am so glad to be back in the saddle. It feels wonderful to be here in my little private studio out in nowhere. So that being said, Bobby Jean, thanks for your consideration. And thank you for all of you did to hold the show together while I was gone.
Well, we're all a team.
Well, we are a team and we have been for quite a long time. And we will continue to be because we are, of course, the Writer's Block. This is LA Talk Radio. For Bobby Jean, myself, and Russ Avison, when he decides to show up, we are out of here.